And now, Talk 1410, The Buzz of Vancouver presents Patrick Maliha and Val Cole.
Keeping you connected with the stories people are really talking about.
This is the Afternoon Buzz
on Talk 1410.
Talk 1410, The Afternoon Buzz. Patrick Maliha, Kate Godosik, superstar producer Art Factora.
Hooray!
It is 5:05, and in just moments, we'll be joined by former MI5 spy. She was a spy for 6 years. And not one of these pseudo-spies.
Oh, no.
Not one of these people who is just like, you know,
calls themselves a spy
because yes.
They shop at the spy store.
Oh, God. I don't even want to start on that. What spy goes on a trip? It's like, honey, I seem to have misplaced my exploding pen. It was right by my socks. Go to the spy store. All right.
Gonna get me one of those pin cameras, too.
That's right. I'll be back. Don't worry. And right now, joining us live in studio, we have Annie Machon. And Annie is a former MI5 spy. She was Cambridge educated. When she entered, she was what was referred to as MI5's dream recruit. Blonde, beautiful. She had it all.
Totally.
Now look at me.
Until. That's not true. Until. Now, Annie, is this true? Until you blew the whistle on MI5 for all of their crimes?
Well, certainly for the crimes that I and my ex-partner, David Shaler, witnessed. Bear in mind, we had 3 postings each. We were there for 6 years in total. And we saw a vast array of things going wrong. So that's just a small segment of their work. Imagine what else is going wrong outside that.
Imagine how much else is going wrong and how many people are just accepting it and going along with it.
Very much. They just follow orders. In fact, I think some of it's probably linked into the liquid lunch idea as well. It was very interesting, the little segment you had before the top of the hour. Because there is a huge drinking culture within the British spooks, both MI5 and MI6. And they regularly lose top secret computers, top secret documents in pubs, notebooks, suitcases, everything. And in fact, there was a notorious group in MI5 when I joined who used to go out for liquid lunches, drink about 5 pints of beer and then fall asleep for the rest of the afternoon. And these were senior managers. And they called the pub Base Camp 2. That was their view of it.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, the nation's security is in good hands.
Now this is the thing that I find absolutely fascinating. You get involved with MI5, which a dream come true for many people. First of all, why did you want to become a spy? Why did you want to become a spy? And how do you go about doing it? You can't just answer an ad in the paper.
Well, some people did, actually.
Wow.
I didn't want to be a spy. I was never into spying. But I sort of fell into it by accident. I wanted to be a diplomat. And applied to the Foreign Service in the UK and had a letter through saying there may be other jobs you'd find more interesting. And my initial gut response was, oh, my God, it's MI5. And I was really frightened. I don't know why. unfortunately, my father, who was completely obsessed with things like John le Carré and Len Dayton novels, was with me when I opened the letter. And he said, oh, go on, just ring them up and see what happens. And, you know, the rest is history. So it's all his fault. In fact, I joined.
Now, you were saying earlier that other people just took orders and accepted what was going on. So what was it inside of you and how frightened were you to blow the whistle? Like your conscience must have been weighing on you. But at the same time, was there any fear?
Very much so, yes. Because when we did blow the whistle, we knew that legally we would just be thrown in prison. Mm-hmm. So we actually ran from the country. We went on the run around Europe, literally moving from hotel to hotel for a month. And then I went back to the UK knowing I'd be arrested. They trashed our flat. They did a counterterrorism-style search and ripped it apart.
What year was this when that happened?
This was a long time ago now. It was 97.
1997. Wow. So this is before September 11th.
Yep. This was in the 90s when peace was breaking out across the world. You know, this was a good decade.
Yes.
And they, you know, the ripple effect was massive. They arrested friends, family, journalists, student supporters, the whole thing. And Shaler actually ended up in prison twice because we had to hide out in France for a year. And then they tried to extradite him to prosecute him and failed. But he went and he spent 4 months in prison then. And then we had 2 more years in Paris, taking things as far as we could from there, campaigning for a proper inquiry into their crimes. And then we went back voluntarily in 2000, and Shaler was put on trial for a breach of the Official Secrets Act. There is no defence under this law.
Right.
I mean, if you've ever worked for the agencies, you can never say anything ever to anyone.
It's the US equivalent of high treason. No, to an extent, I guess.
No, there is a different law for prosecuting traitors in the UK.
Oh, I see, okay.
But this is something called the 1989 Official Secrets Act, and that is put in place pretty much to stop whistleblowers. So the services are completely unaccountable, there's no oversight, and they are above criticism. Because if anyone wants to criticise them, even to say, for example, that they're involved in murder, then the whistleblower is the one who's thrown in prison.
So what was your involvement, if any, in this botched assassination attempt?
I wasn't involved. I mean, this was something carried out by MI6, the overseas wing.
Okay.
David Shaler was the head of the Libyan section at the time of the plot, and he was briefed officially by his counterparts in MI6 all the way through. And initially he just thought, oh, it's another one of their sort of James Bond schemes, it won't come to anything. But he briefed his managers. And then suddenly, in about February, March 1995, all these intelligence reports came in showing that an attack had happened against Colonel Gaddafi of Libya. An explosion had occurred underneath a cavalcade of cars, but got the wrong car, obviously. And people were killed in that and the ensuing security shootout. And the operation was also illegal under UK law, because contrary to popular belief, the licence to kill does exist for MI6 under the 1994 Intelligence Services Act if they get prior written permission from their political masters. Now, in this case, they didn't. So we're looking at an attack that's unethical, and it was illegal as well. It killed innocent people.
And they blamed it on?
They blamed it on Islamic extremist terrorists in Libya, with links
otherwise
to Al-Qaeda.
Yeah, otherwise known as Al-Qaeda.
And this is a classic case of what has become known as false flag terrorism, where you set up a bunch of patsies and then carry out an attack and they take the fall for it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is perfectly standard weapon in the arsenal of spy agencies. They do it time and time again.
And I want to get into that, and I want to chat about that, because you were privy to seeing illegal phone taps, mm-hmm. Government ministers kept in line by basically files that were kept on them saying, if you step out of line, we let the world know about this about you. You were privy to witnessing IRA bombings, which could have been prevented
mm-hmm.
with previous intelligence. State-sponsored murder without accountability.
Absolutely.
And I want to discuss with you, and you tell me if you feel comfortable about chatting about this or not. I feel that the September 11th attacks that happened, myself and many other people feel that it is the modern version of the Bay of Tonka.
Mm-hmm.
Vietnam, the U.S. got involved on a lie, as was found out later. No ship was attacked by anyone.
Mm-hmm.
World War II, many people state that the U.S. had prior knowledge that a little-known harbor called Pearl Harbor in Hawaii, nowhere near the U.S., wasn't used for anything other than parts, that they were aware that a bombing was going to occur, but they needed an excuse
mm-hmm.
to get involved in a war to revitalize a country that was choking to death by the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And 2001, the September 11th attacks, many people state that if anything, the U.S. would have known that this was going to occur, but under no circumstances did they ever think that those buildings were going to fall down and as many people were going to be injured as they thought. And as somebody who has been involved in these types of things, do you feel there is any credence to that theory that something other than terrorism was going on with the September 11th attacks?
Absolutely. I don't know what happened on September the 11th.
Mm-hmm.
All I do is campaign for a new inquiry. But I would say that having blown the whistle on two examples of false flag terrorism and having to go on the run for it and live in exile and face mm-hmm. prison and everything, this is a very real thing that intelligence agencies get into.
You were basically telling us of the two false flag episodes of terrorism that you witnessed, were involved in. Start with the first one.
Well, the first one was the Gaddafi plot, which I mentioned, where MI6 tried to assassinate Colonel Gaddafi and it went wrong. And that was really the case that made Chelo and I quit MI5 and go public and go on the run. There are many, many other attacks, though, including the bombing of the Israeli embassy in London in 1994, for which two innocent people were put in prison. But also we've had a series of inquiries into attacks in Ireland as well, things like bombings of pubs in Dublin in the 70s, turned out to have been done by people from the security services and blamed on loyalist terrorists. We've had many, many examples come out of Northern Ireland of collusion between the security forces and terrorist groups, both Republican and loyalist. And, you know, it's not just linked to the UK. I mean, there are other cases. I don't know how much mm-hmm. coverage the death of Alexander Litvinenko had over here. Do you remember the ex-KGB officer who was
the
poisoned?
The one who was poisoned, yes, yeah, of course.
With polonium-210.
Yeah, yeah.
And everyone said, oh, you know, he's a Russian dissident. Actually, no, he wasn't. He was a Russian whistleblower who fled to England for sanctuary, ironically enough, for blowing the whistle on the FSB, the modern KGB. Mm-hmm. And what he said was that there had been a couple of massive explosions in Moscow apartment blocks in 1999, in which hundreds of people had died, which were blamed on Chechen rebels, because the Russian government wanted an excuse to invade Chechnya, and they did. Mm-hmm. One of the bloodiest wars in recent history. And it was all false. It was a false flag operation staged to get Russian public opinion behind the government to invade Chechnya.
Which brings us to your theories of September 11th.
Well, it's certainly, once you accept that false flag happens, and it does, as I said, this is one of the reasons why we blew the whistle, and there are many other examples of it, then any major atrocity you have to look at with that in the back of your mind. And I think we do need a new inquiry into 9/11, because there is a mountain of evidence out there that disproves the official account. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've given us, you know, this apparent explanation for what happened in a sort of staged commission report, which the boundaries of which were actually circumscribed by the neocon government anyway, even before it was written. And it answers no questions. You know, we have architects, we have engineers, we have academics, we have pilots, we have intelligence whistleblowers, we have government whistleblowers, a whole range of people saying, no, that's not the case. We don't agree with this. And we don't agree with it because there are many, many unknown or unanswered questions in the official account, including who bet all the money on the stock options falling with the airlines just before 9/11. Someone made a mint out of that, and it wasn't Al-Qaeda. How the three towers on the day of 9/11 came down, you know, could two planes have brought down three massive skyscrapers in what apparently looks like some sort of controlled demolition way? I'm not saying it is, but it looked like it.
It sure did, yeah.
Yeah. And a whole range of other questions, particularly as well, looking at the air defences. I mean, the US is supposed to have this amazingly sophisticated intelligence infrastructure and defence infrastructure, and yet they get hit by a bunch of people in an operation planned from a cave in Tora Bora using box cutters. I mean, come on.
Well, this is what I was just going to say. It's hard to believe that the largest, superpower in the world that spends the most money on their military system, mm-hmm. something like $300 trillion out of their federal budget every year goes to their military and their intelligence. They have their finger on the pulse of who sneezes while they're walking their dog in Arkansas. I mean, you can't tell me they didn't know who was training to be a pilot in those states.
Well, there have been many, many intelligence whistleblowers coming out of places like the FBI, for example, the CIA, saying, look, there was foreknowledge and it wasn't acted upon, or it was actively suppressed. Mm-hmm. And guess who's suppressed now? It's the whistleblowers. They're all gagged, so nobody can actually investigate what they're saying properly. So I think any intelligent person, when presented with the evidence and the questions around 9/11, has to say, well, let's have another look at it at the very least, especially when you think of how it's been misused in terms of the war on terror, the erosion of our freedoms, and the illegal wars in the Middle East, where so many people have died.
And I always point to the fact that none of the people on those planes that crashed into the towers were from Iraq.
Indeed. I think Saudi Arabia might feature quite heavily there.
The only, I mean, this is something that I'm sure you get into at your presentation, which you're going to be doing tomorrow, correct,
yes,
at the Vancouver Public Library. But Saudi Arabia, the only country that the U.S. does not have intelligence officers or agencies in.
They
correct.
Have a lot of military bases, though, and, of course, a lot of oil companies. But, yes, I should be talking about this and many, many other things, you know, what it's like to be a spy, what it's like to go on the run, everything, mm-hmm. Tomorrow night at the library. So
And it's absolutely fascinating. So at the Vancouver Public Library. Mm-hmm. And, by the way, do you do these public speaking seminars now because it's the safe way to hide, almost like hiding in plain sight? Do you not fear for your life with everything you're saying?
I think one of the things I learned very early on was that it's very frightening to have knowledge which is dangerous. But if you go public with it and blow the whistle, then it is a degree of protection.
Mm-hmm. So your partner, David Shaler, spent time in prison. How is it that you didn't have to go to jail?
Well, I was arrested, and it did look at one point like I would be prosecuted. But he was the one who witnessed the Gaddafi plot, so he spoke more about intelligence, and they really had it in for him. Sadly, we actually separated a couple of years ago, and he seems to have had some sort of breakdown because of the pressure he was put under. Mm. And that's the price, you know, people pay when they blow the whistle. He was a very courageous man who stood up for right, and the British state, really went for him. Mm. You know, not just imprisoning him and prosecuting him, but also trying to destroy his reputation in the media. I mean, we saw firsthand how the mainstream media in the UK can be manipulated by the spies. Mm-hmm. You know, places like MI6 have dedicated sections that plant fake stories in the media, for example.
So when was it clear for you to stop being on the run and to really start speaking like you're speaking with us right now?
Well, we actually spent 1 month literally on the run, and that was moving from hotel to hotel around Europe, looking over our shoulders, paying everything cash, you know, all the standard tricks which we learned when we were on the inside. And then we had to live in hiding in a farmhouse in France for a year, and then 2 years in exile in Paris. And I have to say, if you're going to run and live in exile, go to Paris. It was gorgeous.
But since you and then, Jim Morrison hanging out.
Yeah, all the best exiles go to Paris. But yeah, the case itself finished in 2003 when Shayla was released from his sentence. And then I wrote a book which was suppressed for about a year and a half. And since then, I've been involved in campaigning. I've been very involved in the peace movement in the UK. And also, as well, trying to campaign for a new inquiry into 9/11. I've worked with all sorts of people, like the last man out of the Twin Towers, William Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. I've toured the UK many times with him, Europe with him. Also, I had the pleasure of meeting Richard Gage last November. He was the architect who's saying, look, the basic physics completely contradict what is supposed to be the official account of the collapse of the Twin Towers.
That's
and
fascinating.
He spoke across Europe to packed audiences.
Wow.
I mean, the response was amazing.
Annie, this is fascinating. And next time you are coming through, I want you to, we're going to have an hour. You and I, we're going to sit down. We'll have an hour. We'll chat. And
I'll go for a liquid lunch.
Yes.
I'll come with you to the liquid lunch.
Oh, love it.
But this is something that I could chat about for hours and hours. But Kate has a quick question.
I just wanted to, because it's also mentioned here that you have some stories about our own CSIS.
Mm. Well, actually, then they're quite a sort of fluffy intelligence organization.
Really? I find that so hard to believe that the Canadian Secret Service... I just imagine the Canadian Secret Service is just some guy dressed up as, you know, a woodsman going, nobody here but us woodsmen, eh?
Like, no, but I mean, there is actually one issue that is of major concern. That's a project called Echelon, which is listening posts of America, Canada, New Zealand, Australia, and the UK all share information, and they can only eavesdrop outside their own countries legally. So they all eavesdrop on each other's countries and then share the information.
Oh, that's sweet.
So that sort of swings around all the democratic accountability notions. It's very sneaky.
And man, see, this is why it's something we could talk about for a thousand years.
Kidding.
Because until we had a conservative government that shared the same political views as the U.S. Mm-hmm. did with mm-hmm. the Bush administration, in Canada, there were never any quote-unquote terrorist cells. Mm-hmm. And then we have a conservative government, and all of a sudden there's these 10 or 12 guys who were plotting to kill the prime minister. And now we're finding out they had nothing other than, we should kill the prime minister. And that's supposed to be a terrorist cell. And
well,
that
would be half the population. Really,
I was going to say, it was supposed to frighten Canadians into wanting to have something akin to the Patriot Act. Oh. But instead...
And to go to war.
Exactly.
Yeah,
but instead, exactly. Canadians simply said, oh, you want to kill our prime minister? Yes. Be my guest. Let's see it when it happens. And Canadians just did not care. And then the prime minister, obviously, there was no true plot, in my opinion, mm-hmm. because the prime minister had no security after that. He just walked around and he was just like, whatever, I'm just here hanging out. So I'm like, anyway, so obviously there was no terrorist plot. Mm. So
tomorrow at the Vancouver Public Library, what time does it start?
7 o'clock, so people get there for 6:30.
And so if anybody wants more information about you, mm-hmm. where can they go?
My website is just www.anniemachon.com.
M-A-C-H-O-N.
Yeah.
And Art will put the link to your website, and from your website, can they find tickets?
They can, yes. There's a section that cunningly disguises the Canadian tour.
Oh, perfect.
You have to search for it.
Perfect. Yeah. So Art's going to put the link to your website, Annie. And thank you very much. Fascinating, absolutely fascinating stuff. Absolutely wonderful.
Please come back and see us.
I will. Well, Vancouver is just so beautiful. I'm blown away. So I'm definitely coming back at
some
point.
Excellent. When you come back, let us know, mm-hmm. and we'll earmark an hour for you. A half hour does not do you or your life justice. So thank you so very much, Annie.
Thank you.
Still ahead, it'll be time for you to get off the couch, get on the phone, and make the call. The road rage.
Now they're going to go for some shaken, not stirred.